Music is the focus of this hour, music for a particular purpose. Before we talk about it, let's hear some of it. Like Brahms' Lullaby emerging from the harp of Peter Roberts. Peter is a music thanatologist and an Australian, and apparently the only person who can claim both of those titles together. He is the subject of a documentary film called From Music Into Silence, screening tonight in Ashland and tomorrow in Eugene. We'll spend the hour talking about the film, the journey, and music thanatology generally. Peter Roberts, thank you for joining us in the studio.
Thank you, Jeffrey. It's lovely to be here.
He is indeed here from Australia. However, we have to deal with Farshid Akhlaghi, the director and co-producer of the film, by phone from Australia. Farshid, can you hear us?
Hi, Jeffrey. Yes, I can hear you very well. Thanks
good.
For having me.
It's good to have you here. And then your co-producer, Sami Ghaffari, is in the studio with us. Her visa cleared. Sami, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And then we have from Resonance Music in the Rogue Valley, a music thanatologist who have visited the Jefferson Exchange in the past. Good to have them back. Elizabeth Markell, good to see you.
Good morning.
And James Markell, welcome to you.
James Excel, but yeah.
James Excel, sorry.
It's okay.
Peter, you had a whole other career before taking up music thanatology and a business, Roberts Interiors. Tell us about that whole process of extricating yourself from that long period.
Gosh, how many hours do we have? But the short version is that I had the furniture business, retail furniture business for around about 18 plus years. And I was in retail with my father for some time before that, 13 years. And I got to the stage of I've only got to 48, and I realized that I was really in the wrong place, and I didn't know what on earth I could do. And therein lies the tale and the film. And I just didn't know what I could do. And so it was I spent a couple of years just sitting on that, not knowing. And then I heard about this program that was in Missoula, Montana, training musicians to use music in this very specific way. And something in that just caught me. And just caught me. And I extracted myself from my life, from my furniture business, from all the responsibilities, the financial security and so on. And my family, my wife and my two daughters, we moved to Missoula, Montana, and that's where the training was, at the St. Patrick Hospital.
Right, so the whole family left Australia and went to Montana.
Yep.
So I understand a poem from Rumi, who lived more than 700 years ago, also figures in your journey.
Yes. And at that time of wondering what on earth I was going to do with this, because I couldn't share it with too many people, but I felt that I was going a little crazy. I had this great yearning to do something else, and I didn't know what it was. And then a woman I met in a bookshop said, I was looking at books, and she said, look, I've got a tape recording for you. And she gave me this tape recording, and it was Rumi's poem, and it was the Reed Flute Song. And on that poem, it's about a reed that has been cut from the reed bed. So it's cut from the reed bed, and it just longs to go back. It's this longing to go back. And the Sufis have made, the Mevlevi Sufis, you know, the whirling dervishes?
Mm-hmm.
They use that particular, they make a flute made from a reed. They use a flute made from a reed. And when you hear that thing played, it's the most gorgeous crying sound. So I heard the crying sound. I heard the poem. I was crying inside. The combination really affected me, you know. And I was so heartened by it, because here's Rumi from 700 years ago, as you said, saying this is what's going on. It's the reed. You're being called back to your source. You're called back to your source, whatever that is. And that was the thing that really touched me and still touches me now. Yeah.
So Farshid Akhlaghi, what was it that, how did you find Peter Roberts, and what made him worthy of a film?
For a long time, I was thinking about making a movie about beauty and peacefulness. And during my research, I found out about Peter. And when I heard about his story in his life, about that big change in his life, I decided to make a documentary about him, because I found his heart very generous and peaceful. as Rumi said, the only lasting beauty is the beauty of the heart. So I thought that's very beautiful. A man left everything behind to find a way to offer peace and love to others. So I decided to do the same. I put everything on hold, and I decided to make a documentary about him.
So Sami Ghaffari, I mean, it sounds like Peter is the only music thanatologist in Australia. So, I mean, did you go all over the country looking for others, or talk about the process of making
the film? Yeah, it's a very kind of funny story, because when Farshid found out that actually about music thanatologists and music thanatology, and tried to just do more research and find out more about that. So we started to just find one music thanatologist in Australia to just have a chat and just get more information. And we started to just search from our neighbors, and we just kind of like extended the search domain, but then just realized, oh my God, just one music thanatologist in the whole Australia. And we were lucky because just kind of 1.5 hours drive from our place, you know how Australia big. So
Australia.
So it was like it's not in other states. So yeah. So yeah, it's the only music thanatologist in Australia.
All right. So for Elizabeth and James, who've been at this for quite some time now, not many people do this worldwide. Did I see there may be
about 100 or so? Yeah. Uh-huh. That's one thing they emphasize at the foundation, that the Asante Foundation, because we work at Rogue Regional Medical Center, that there are about 100 music thanatologists in the world, and we got two of them.
2% of the world's population.
Yeah, no kidding.
So what do we know about the history of music thanatology? I mean, if it's not that big, it's probably not that old, would be my guess.
It was developed by the founder of the field starting in the early 80s, and she started teaching. She got a grant from the Pfizer Foundation in the early 90s and partnered with St. Patrick's Hospital in Missoula to start training.
Okay, and so when did you two pick it up?
We started that school ended after five two-year classes. And for a while, there was no training available, and then some of the graduates started a program through Lane Community College in Eugene, and the didactics that we had were in Portland. And so we had 2 years of very intense training, and we graduated in 2009, and we've been working at Rogue Regional for close to 9 years now.
Playing for hospice patients.
Not just that. We're in the palliative care team
there. So.
And so we do work in critical care. We also play in the behavioral health unit once a week. Because although this is geared towards people at the end of life, it has palliative effects on everyone and psychological effects.
So, Elizabeth, how different is one session from each to the next? I mean, do you go in with a particular idea of, like, this is what this room could use and these are the pieces I'll probably play? Or how do you work that out?
Well, for me, because we're considered part of the medical team, we do work with patients' charts and we chart notes on every person we play for, except for the behavioral health unit is different. But so I sort of just try and look at where they are. We try and prioritize people who are nearing end of life, but often there's requests for helping people who are having anxiety or dementia patients who are agitated or just family situations that are stressful for everyone. So we get different kinds of referrals. And so I just sort of read a little about them and maybe their religious background and just sort of what disease or thing they've been going through. And then when I go to a person's room, and sometimes I get called in a room I haven't read about the person, it's really about being present. So one person who's very close to dying could be really different from another. So I look at the way they're breathing, who else is in the room with them. Sometimes I feel someone's pulse. And, you know, sometimes I can start with something with really a strong meter and then flow into something more spacious. Sometimes it could be, ooh, it's already really quiet in here. I'm going to just start with something really open. And if there's a lot of people, it's different. So it's very much, I don't really plan. I go with openness to observing.
So taking the surrounding, you're listening as well as being somebody to listen to.
Exactly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You mentioned before, Jeffrey, about being harp and voice. And the other thing to add in there is silence. Mm-hmm. You know, we are so comfortable with silence. Mm-hmm. I always say what I offer is harp, voice, and silence.
Yeah. We're talking about music thanatology here on the Jefferson Exchange. And let's hear another clip. This is from a disc that that Peter Roberts put together. So here's some of him playing. So let's talk about your career in music, Peter Roberts. You walked away from it. I love the name of your old band, The Vacant Lot, from years ago. Had you considered music as some kind of a career at some point?
Never. I think I was, well, my mother would tell you, and she said on the film, you know, that I've been connected to music for a long time. When I was a little kid, I would get in behind a piano when someone was playing so I could just feel the sound of the piano, you know. So I think music has been in my bones forever, but I was always, it took me ages to call myself a musician because I was just sort of a knock-around music guy. I played guitar and I played banjo.
But wrote some songs, did some vocals.
Oh, yeah, do all that. And then I was in a folk group, and the Vacant Lot was a school band, you know. We didn't get too far with that, but we had a lot of fun. And yes, it was in my bones always. And I think these days, if my parents, you know, these days if a parent would look at a child who's got those attributes, you know, and say, why don't you do music for a career? But my father had a business, and so therefore I didn't know what to do with myself, and he sort of said, well, come over here into my business. And so I worked for him for a long time. So I was a little bit of a misfit, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people get to that place in life. As I said, I was 48. You know, you've gone down one path, but it's just not quite the fit for the person that you are. And so that was it. That was it for me.
It sounds like quite a despairing moment, though, when you just said, that's it, I can't do this anymore.
Yep. It was.
Yeah, it's described in the film.
Yes, it describes it in the film. You know, we're talking about death and dying here, and it sounds like this film's going to be very heavy, but it's not. It's a lot of fun, too. It's a lot of fun. And I say on the film, I'm going to tell you that the part where I couldn't do it anymore was I went to because I was in the furniture business, we used to have to go to interior design shows, you know, and we'd look at fabrics and choose fabrics for lounge suites and so on and coordinate them with the curtains and the lamps and all that. And I'd had enough of it, right? So there am I doing this. And we went to Melbourne, you know, a big city, and they had a wonderful exhibition, and we went into this place and people are trying to coax you onto their stand, you know, come and have a look at this, come on. And I went onto a stand and there was one fellow there and I was looking at his fabrics. I looked up at him and he had turquoise eyes, right? Mm. Most extraordinary eyes, turquoise eyes. And then I looked down and his suit was turquoise as well, and I realized he'd put contact lenses in to match his suit.
So he really wanted the carpet to match the drapes.
That carpet to match it, exactly right. And that was it. And that was the bit that I can't do this anymore, you know. Like I say on the film, that was my epiphany, you know, this guy with his turquoise eyes and suit. And I just left that building. I thought, I just can't do this anymore. So that was it, you know, that was the moment. Yeah.
Peter Roberts is the focus of the documentary film From Music Into Silence. It's a documentary about Peter's foray into music thanatology. He is apparently the only person who does this, playing for either terminally ill or very sick people in Australia. And we also have with us Elizabeth Markell and James Excel, who do the same thing in the Rogue Valley. Farshid Akhlaqi, the director of the film, is on the phone from Australia, and his co-producer Sami Ghaffari in the studio with us as well. Join the conversation on the exchange. Questions, comments for our guests? We can hear you from all over the world. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So Farshid, talk about the approach. Did you just call up Peter or show up at the hospital one day? How did that happen?
Yeah, no, I emailed him. I contacted him. I wanted to see him because I decided to make this documentary, but I wanted to ask him first if he's happy to make that documentary. It was not an easy decision for him to make as well. So, yeah, I met him, and I didn't know about Rumi because I'm originally from Iran. I'm Persian, and Rumi is Persian as well. But then I met Peter, when I found out about music thanatology, when I found out he's the only one in Australia who does music thanatology, I didn't know about Rumi. But when I met him, he said me about Rumi. He said me that change in his life was called by Rumi, and Rumi had a great impression on him. So I decided, definitely, I said to myself, this is a sign, I want to make this film, because Rumi was there, Rumi was Persian, I'm Persian, and I said to him, and there was a sign for both of us, because I know it was not very easy for Peter to have a filmmaker around him when he was playing for the patients in the hospital, but that was really helpful. So yeah, I met him, and he was thinking of my idea of making a documentary about me for a month or maybe 3 weeks. And I was very lucky, I was very gifted that he accepted to be part of this movie. And now, after 4 years of working on this film and traveling more than 100 times to Geelong, because Peter is living in another city which is close to Melbourne, which is about 1.5 hours from Melbourne. After 100 times traveling to Melbourne and making this, to Geelong and making this movie, I really feel proud of myself, because this film is like an invitation to people to follow their heart, to do something beautiful, to do something peaceful. So, yeah, that was the story.
So Sami Ghaffari, that sounds like some logistic stuff. Aside from the 100 trips between Melbourne and Geelong, the getting into hospital rooms and getting around people who are sick, I mean, that must have presented some obstacles to the process of making the film.
True. The problem was that actually in the sensitive environment that actually Peter was playing hard for a patient, Farshid had to just find a new way of filming. So we couldn't have kind of like a different cameraman, different soundman, like big booms and this kind of thing. So we actually worked together to just kind of like make a very small but with high quality kind of features, equipment, camera and microphone. So just make sure that actually we capture everything with no kind of like a distraction. And Farshid actually used the very observational technique, which is a fly on the wall. So it was like just following Peter in a way that actually he's kind of like observing what's happening without kind of any interaction between patients and even the main character. So I'm sure that actually in that kind of 100 times travel, he took more than 1,000 hours footages. But it's like, how are we going to just make a story from that? So he had a storyline, kind of like the base of the movie. But in terms of how we're going to make it like as beautiful as possible, it was another kind of like artistic side of that actually Farshid and the whole team actually were able to just do that. There were some kind of situations, and you can see in the movie that Farshid actually had to just move when any of the relatives or friends in the kind of the scene actually were moving. So it's not very kind of easy thing to just change even the angle of the camera, because normally it's in kind of a small room with lots of friends and family actually there. Very sensitive moments, very special moments, I would say, without kind of like making more distraction, and just make sure all people actually feel the whole kind of silence of the the moment. Yeah,
at a very sensitive time in somebody's life.
And the way Farshid filmed this, you know, he was very discreet, and as Sammy said, fly on the wall. It was a gift to me because I could focus on what I was doing, and he was very, very sensitive to what was going on. And so, you know, like anything in the room, does intrude or does affect the atmosphere. You know, if someone walks in, that affects the atmosphere. It's not bad, or it just does. So a fellow with a camera could really do it. And I had a bad experience with the film crew once. Not a bad experience. It wasn't ideal. Mm-hmm. You know, who had the mics, had the boom, had the sound guy, had the director. Whereas Farshid would just move just gently around and observe from a distance and capture those beautiful shots. And again, we're talking about dying a lot here, but in fact, at the hospital where I play for babies. Also, premature babies. Mm-hmm. And the two pieces you've played, you played the Brahms Lullaby. In fact, that piece I brought to the hospital, and we play that whenever a baby's born in the hospital. So throughout the whole place, everyone knows something wonderful happened, something gorgeous has happened in the hospital. Anyway, and the last piece you played, the going home, in fact, we've now brought that into the hospital. So when someone has died, it's an acknowledgement of the life that we've cared for in the hospital. So that just broadcasts throughout the hospital, just gently, no great fanfare, just say, hey, we cared for someone. There's some music. The nurses go about their business, but it's very beautiful. So both ends of life, we have music.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Markell, you know, musicians in most realms get some feedback, but you're not working with an audience that's, you know, showing up just to hear music. You're really sort of a side of the main event going on in any hospital room. So what is that like as a performer to be performing to audiences that aren't really going to do much in terms of showing appreciation?
For me, actually, I love the fact that what I'm doing is going to be in service to people, that it's not a performance. I'm there to listen and be present and respond to each being there and offer beauty that comes through and to feel them and reflect their beauty back to them. That's what I love about this work.
Mm-hmm. Let's cue up another one of these pieces from Peter's disc, and I don't know the track names because Peter just didn't provide any, put them on there. But
sort of guy,
let's go to the break with this next piece, and we'll figure out, we'll identify it on the backside as you did the first time. So we'll go to break now. We'll come back and talk more about music thanatology and the film From Music Into Silence with Peter Roberts, Farshid Akhlaghi, Elizabeth Markell, James XL, and Sami Ghaffari. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in about a minute and a half. Talking into the break about responses from people. This is not an event when you bring a harp into a hospital room where somebody is very ill, where you're expecting a lot of responses from people. But James, you were saying as we were going into the break about one of the most gratifying responses you do get.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for in a successful vigil. One thing is if I have to tiptoe out of the room. That's if everyone is asleep, if the family is asleep, if everyone except the staff is asleep. it's wonderful that it, you know, we're not, this is not a performance. We're entering into a relationship with the patient, and our perception is based on our clinical training and just the observation of countenance of the stats on a monitor. We can see the oxygen saturation increase. We can see the heart calm down. It's not, like I said, it's not a performance. Mm-hmm. It's we're entering into a very beautiful interaction with the patient.
Mm-hmm. So, Elizabeth Markell, in getting your work with Asante established, have you taken additional training other than what was provided when you trained as music thanatologist to help understand things like vital signs and knowing what's going on medically with the patient?
Actually, we've done continuing education kind of things, but learning to work with the breath and follow breathing and count that and learning to assess someone's pulse. And we had, that was part of the music thanatology training and part of what made it so extensive, and learning about pharmacology and disease processes and anatomy. So it was very, very comprehensive.
So we're clinically qualified, and that's how we get to add notes to the patient's charts, for instance.
And so, Peter Roberts, when you decamped your whole family from Geelong, Australia, to Montana to take the training, I mean, did you know how rigorous it was going to get in ways other than?
I had no idea. I was way out of my depth for a long time. I couldn't play the harp when I arrived. I told you I was a knock around musician. Mm-hmm. You know, they were more at the. I came across for my interview, and they were more interested in the reason you wanted to do it, and they figured they could catch you up on the rest, and that was the case. I want to go back to the conversation about the atmosphere in the room mm-hmm. that Elizabeth and James, were talking about there. And just to bring it back to the film, because Farshid had a wonderful gift of presenting this film. I can only say it's poetic in the way it is filmed, because he creates this atmosphere. So it's observing me and my life, my family and so on and so on. But there are spaces in this film. It's not like it's linear, and it's not. Perhaps Farshid, you could talk about how you did this, because that's people are blown away when they've seen this film.
You're leading straight to my next question for Farshid, which is how is the film structured, Farshid?
Yeah.
How did you arrange it?
Yeah, sure. The main structure of the film is observational documentary, so there is no interview. Mm-hmm. I'm just following Peter in different circumstances, but I added a poetic structure to the movie as well, and the poetic structure is coming from Peter's life. So I'm just showing Peter in the structure of the film, and the pace of the film is slower than other documentaries, and I try to create an atmosphere which is like reading a poem for mm-hmm. 75 minutes. And really, this idea came to me from Peter's life and his character, because, as I said before, his life has been changed after reading or listening to a poem. And even now, he's really impressed when he reads the poem, when he reads the mystic poem. So I really try to make something very poetic and in a very, very, very slow pace. So there is not a big climax, there is not a big arc in the structure. This is like a poem. Mm-hmm. I just want the audience to read the poem, watch the movie, enjoy this beauty. I just want to share the beauty of music thanatology and the beauty of a very peaceful heart with my audience. I want them just to watch and enjoy. And I want to tell them, this movie is not a sad movie. Peter is helping people to live this world in peace, but this movie is not a sad movie. This movie is about the beauty of music and anthology. So, yeah, there was no doubt for me to make a poetic movie, and I think the response was really good from the audience, because all of our screenings in Melbourne was sold out. And then we had a screening season in here, which is really strange for an independent movie because we had no big company behind this movie. This movie is self-funded. We had no investors. So it was really strange to have all these sessions sold out. And then we traveled to all the major Australian cities, and the response was really perfect, which was a little bit difficult. So because he says you are not used to watch poetic and very slow-paced movies. You don't want to watch fast-paced movies. So it was a big risk, but the response was perfect, and I feel so happy to make that decision to make a kind of poetic movie.
A 75-minute poem, as you say, not a movie where things blow up. That's a nice nice change from what goes on in the world. I want to ask you, Peter, about a question that got asked of Elizabeth and James on a previous visit by one of our callers who said, you know, I get to the end of my life, I want to hear music by the people I like. You know, I want to hear the rock and roll I grew up with. So, I mean, you probably have heard this yourself. There's only so far you can go in complying.
That's right. That's right. And that's the truth. You know, those are the sort of things you say when you're fit and well. You know, I can say I want all sorts of things, you know. But in fact, at the time of dying, you want your next breath. You want your next breath. That's it. And so we can help them get that next breath. We can help them ease into the breath slowing down, you know. And I think that's a gift to play the music that people want to hear, you know. But, you know, we're not forcing ourselves on anyone. But if you need help at the end, and you've had your Jefferson Airplane playing, you know, but now you just want to breathe, please, please, one more breath, one more breath, one more breath. We're there to say, okay, rest into this. I'll play it this way. You can breathe some more. You can rest some more, you know.
Do you find yourself setting an example, as it were? I mean, basically breathing with the patients when you're
Yes and no, you know. Yeah, you're watching them, but you're certainly playing according to their breathing. So, yeah. Because some of them, you know, they take a breath and then there's an enormous pause.
And you do sometimes sing, you were saying. So it's music, it's silence, and it's also singing.
Yes, yes. So the music, you know, voice, silence, because that adds another element to the tapestry. Sometimes it can be a very intimate and beautiful thing, you know, for a man, for a bloke, to sing to another man, you know, or to sing to a woman, sing tenderly to a woman. But I've got to be careful with that, you know. Not everybody wants that. So that's part of our training, to know when not to do things and just leave it be. But it can be a gift, you know, a beautifully warm tones of a voice, you know. We just weave those things together. It's what we do, James and Elizabeth. We do these things. So the voice,
I want to bring in an email from one of our listeners, and she identifies herself by last name too, so because she wants people to know she is thanking you directly, Elizabeth and James, but it's from Elizabeth Austin, who says, "Music Thanatology enhances life at all stages. Elizabeth Markell and James XL have played for Ashland's annual New Year's Labyrinth Walk for many years, bringing ineffable joy and beauty into the room. Such a pleasure to stand between the two harpists as they play." That's from Elizabeth Austin, who is the labyrinth leader for the Ashland Sacred Walk to the New Year. So you got some thanks there.
Yeah, and she was not paid for that.
I think you got Elizabeth Verklempt here. We have also a phone call here from Kevin in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hello, I just wanted to call and thank you for a beautiful program, and hello, Elizabeth and James.
Hi.
I've been a musician for 40 years, and twice in my life I've played for someone who was dying, and they're two of the most exquisite experiences I've had as a musician. But I also wanted to mention that I have some dear friends who are working, there are other people working in palliative care. It's kind of a growing movement, who aren't necessarily thanatologists per se with that training, but are working just as general musicians, doing some of the other work that you're mentioning. Mm-hmm. So it's a growing movement. I'm not growing fast enough as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, thank you all for the beautiful work that you do. Appreciate it.
Kevin, thanks for the call on that. So is the definition of music thanatology, certainly the therapeutic settings has expanded over time. Mm-hmm. So Elizabeth, is it also bringing in more instruments, more approaches over time?
Well, music thanatology itself is a really specific practice that was developed by Therese Schroeder Schieker and is sort of being passed along in a particular way, and it is specific with harp and voice. And there are there is a growing, as Kevin said, a field of various therapeutic music practices, and some, there's this International Harp Therapy Program that Tina Turin developed. There's the Music for Healing and Transitions Program, where it's really training people, because you can be an amazing musician, and yet doing this work, you need to be observant and pay attention in a different kind of way.
I want to, before we go, bring in another instrument that we haven't talked about yet, and that is the Reverie Harp. I'll ask James to explain in just a moment after we hear it first. Peter, rather. So evidently there's this additional instrument, the Reverie Harp. This one is tuned to a G major scale, evidently. So it's open tuning, no?
So it's not a G major, no. It's a different thing again. The instrument, well, it's an open tuning, yeah. This one is a pentatonic, the one that you can hear. The instrument came about because I was playing for a patient who told me he could play the harp. Mm-hmm. This fellow had motor neurons disease, and so his hands weren't capable. Mm-hmm. And I asked him to bring it along, and he bought a strange homemade instrument with wire strings that was out of tune, but he had it wrapped up in a scarf, you know, it was beautifully wrapped. He loved this thing. So I thought, what on earth could there be that someone like him could play, you know, that would be better? And I played the guitar, you know, and so I was thinking of open tunings and what we do with our harps. We're playing different modes, you know, they all have different effects, and so I was trying to get two different sounds on the one instrument, and so over time this was developed, and it's this beautiful, it's hard to describe, but think of a large tennis racket or something,
a couch pillow or something.
Yeah. But it's a beautiful egg shape, you know, it's a womb shape, you know, it's like a lovely egg shape, and with a flat bottom, and people can hug it. You know, you can hug it and have it on your chest. And it's designed so that anyone can play it. So if you touch those strings, it's going to sound beautiful. Or two people can play it. The bass notes are in the middle. So the notes fan out from the middle, left and right. So therefore you get a harmony.
The edges,
That's how you get a harmony, because it's set that way.
So just pulling your hands apart, you get that.
That's it. One person who's a bit tentative, you know, could play a waterfall sound on one side, while the other person can start picking random notes, and you've got thing going. So therefore, grandmother, grandchild, sick person, you know, someone with arthritis, you know, you can see the potential of it.
Wow, I think we should bring...
And on and on and on. Yeah, there's another program in talking about Reverie Harps.
I think we should bring our Reverie Harp down to the theater tonight so people can take a look at it.
There we go.
Okay, and the theater, in fact. Thank you for ending us there, James XL. The screening is tonight at Ashland's Varsity Theater at 6:30. That's From Music Into Silence. Tomorrow at 7 at the Bijou Art Cinemas in Eugene. I want to thank Peter Roberts for coming all the way from Australia to help promote his film. Farshid Akhlaghi for joining us by phone from Australia. Sami Ghaffari from coming from Australia to help boost the movie. She's the co-producer. And Elizabeth Markell and James XL from the Rogue Valley for joining us once again to talk about music thanatology. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.